Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becklass AB to CV 2024 Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now.
Down goes Duffy on call. Frank Mir does it again.
Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
There are a couple of absolutely self-involved bull artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Done. All right, Anik and Florian podcast back in your life, and it is great to be with you for a second time this week, just days in advance of UFC 286. This is our 396th episode presented by DraftKings. Not in London just yet, but very excited to be there and very excited to have off the top of the show today. You may know him as a regular contributor here or on Severe MMA or SureDog.com. The great Sean Sheehan is with us back from a wedding and squeezing us in. Good evening, sir. How are you?
How are you? I'm not too bad. I have a little friend with me as well here. Look at this. Look what I found going through my
yes.
cleaning up my office the other day. I was like, I have
I
to show
exactly
that.
Exactly like that. Right now,
yeah,
it's great.
That's it. It's amazing the presence you get as an MMA fan in Ireland growing up when no one else has heard of MMA anything. They see UFC, I'll buy that for Sean. Like, keep it for like 6 months and give it to him for his birthday. You know, so
that's
I got Kenny for my birthday 1 year, so it was great.
So, if you're listening and not watching, was that a Kenny Florian action figure? Is that
it
what
was?
That is?
Yeah, fully movable. Look at the sharp.
Look at that widow's peak. That's phenomenal.
Perfect. We'll have to talk off the air about how much you might be willing to sell that to me for, but that's a conversation for another day. Hey, so I heard you talking to our producer backstage before the start of the show about Christian Leroy Duncan, who makes his UFC debut this weekend. So might as well pick your brain on him. Former Cage Warriors champion, a lot of potential. Your thoughts on him coming into the big show this weekend, my brother?
I was doing a podcast with someone recently, you know, a fellow person who kind of covers the UK Irish European scene. And I kind of asked the question, if you had to pick one person from the whole scene who you think could be a future UFC champion, who would it be? And we both picked Christian Leroy Duncan. That's, I think, how good he is. He's He hasn't had many fights. I think he's only, what, 8-9 fights into his career, but he's had a lot of experience as an amateur. And, you know, Ian Dean is the matchmaker over in Cage, where he's a brilliant mind and a brilliant guy doing it. And he's been giving him tougher test after tougher test. Some guys, you know, you have to go and you have to watch a lot of fights over in Poland or in Russia to see how good they are. You watch those fights, go, oh, this is going to be a tough test for Christian Leroy Duncan. And then he swallows him up in a round. That's the type of fighter he is. He's a phenom. really good athletically, good on the ground, good wrestling, but brilliant striking. And with the middleweight division the way it is at the moment, I think he can climb quickly. And you see by the matchmaking, because UFC matchmakers know as well, he's fighting Dusko Todorovic, who's, you know, a good fighter, knockout power, has had a lot of UFC fights, so he's not getting a gimme straight away at all. But I think he'll be well able for it. You know, you never know with the UFC jitters and all that. So give me a little bit of a fallback here. But I think he has a really, really, really high top-end ceiling. And I'm really looking forward to seeing where he can go. It's exciting watching him.
I love it. All right. So when we have you on, and we got to make it a monthly thing, I always feel like I'm chasing the clock, any number of different directions in which we can go. But I want to start with Merab Dwalishvili, if I could, because we're only a few days removed from his main event win over Piotr Jan. And I'm hearing guys like Kenny Florian and Ray Longo and Matt Serra suggest that they've never seen anything quite like this guy. You've got a very good historical framework for this sport, for the bantamweight division. Are we getting a little bit too superlative? I'm not sure that anybody has weaponized pressure quite as well as he had against elite competition. Your thoughts on Merab over Piotr Jan last weekend?
See, I think the difference between Merab and a lot of other people from years gone by who would, I suppose, be looked at as very strong, dominating grapplers like John Fitch and Yushin Okami and even GSP to a certain extent and others, it felt always like they preyed on the weakness of their opponents. So John Fitch was a better wrestler than almost everyone he fought, was able to take him down and kind of, you know, destroy lots of guys that way. We're in an era now where everyone, like Piotr Jan included, is massively well-rounded. So to be able to do that to fighters who don't have that gaping weakness in their game is just... it's just another level. It's grand. Like, anyone could come out and wrestle me and take me down and destroy me, but to do it to Kenny Florian, or to do it to Piotr Jan, or to do it to anyone in the UFC at a high level is a different sort of thing. And for Merab, it's special because, like, I looked at Merab and, you know, we're obviously the Ray Longo is involved here and everything, and they're big Ray Longo fans and big Merab fans and everything like that. But I wasn't convinced. Honestly, I wasn't convinced that style could get to a high level. It's all that style, because he's so good at it, could always work up until a certain level. But I was kind of thinking, like, there's so many missed takedowns, there's so much pressure put on, can he keep this going over five rounds? And it actually got better over five rounds. And it's a way, you know, we talk about you know, obviously I always come on and talk about judging over three rounds. There's an issue with that style, because let's say, you know, Chito Vera, the way he's won a couple of rounds recently, he's lost and lost and lost, big shot, you lose the round. That can happen to Merab, because Merab won five rounds at the weekend. Not one of them was close to a 10-8. We weren't even talking about 10-8, right? You know? So one big shot, big knockdown can happen. You lose a round. For that to happen twice in a three-round fight is, you know, is very possible. For that to happen three times in a five-round fight or more is more unlikely, especially with the way you get to the, you know, the latter half of the second round into the third round, and you can no longer breathe, never mind punch him in the face, you know? Yeah. So his style works so much better. And the one thing is, and I kind of put it out there and people are taking it as a negative, and it wasn't. Like, I think he broke the record, I'm pretty sure he did, for the most missed takedowns in UFC history. In the fight, he had to have. But that's, in a three-round fight, I think that's a negative in some ways. But in a five-round fight, it's a positive, because when he misses those takedowns, like, some of them were giving us takedowns and he wasn't even trying to take him down. He was just trying to push him into the cage, push him in against the clinch. And you saw Longo got very, very easy instructions. Takedown, strike, takedown. Like, right, you've three things to do and the two of them are the same, you know? And he just did that for 25 minutes nonstop. And if you can do that for 25 minutes nonstop against a high-level guy like that and just shut down their complete game, it makes you the most well-rounded fighter in the world, because you can shut down every single part of another guy's game. And to do that to a guy who has, I assume we've all gone back and watched that Magomedov fight at this stage, the second one, where for 25 minutes, Jan just stopped every single takedown. He did it for most of this fight, especially early in the fight, and to still be able to beat him and end up, you know, kind of destroying him towards the end, it was phenomenal. So it's very different from the old school grapplers we had who were dominating guys who had issues. He's dominating a guy who has, okay, everyone has issues, but not the type of gaping holes that people in the past had.
Sean, I want to rewind a little bit because we haven't talked to you since the last pay-per-view. What do you think of John Jones's performance, and where does he sit in the GOAT talk for you?
Oh, God. I got into this the other day, and I wished immediately I hadn't got into it. Look, in my opinion, there's four people in the conversation. One of them is up behind me there, Demetrius Johnson. The other is John Jones, Anderson Silva, and GSP. Those, to me, are the four. A lot of people are getting on to me, Jose Aldo. I love Jose Aldo. If there was a fifth, he probably would be the fifth for me. But I think it's those four, and we can argue who you think. I think Demetrius Johnson, because I think the greatest fighter of all time is the best fighter of all time, is the most skillful, and just for me, he is. But if you look at what John Jones has done, it's very hard to argue against him. Look, it's hard to argue against any of them, to be honest. And it's easy to argue for all of them because they're so good. But on his performance itself, do you know what? As a purely someone who loves to analyze fights and talk about fights and is a fan of the fights, it was a bit disappointing because we didn't see more, you know? And especially I was there, you know, 6:30 in the morning or whatever it was, and it felt like the fight was over before it was even over. They showed the reaction of John and the guys in the commentary, and they're all like kind of looking at each other like, what happened there? And we saw the replay and we saw what did happen, so that was fine. But it just felt like we were kind of robbed a little bit of seeing John Jones, if you get me? Because like, if he goes in and fights Stipe, we still have those questions like, can John Jones produce at heavyweight over, you know, 25 minutes? Is John Jones's game going to be as useful at heavyweight as it is at light heavyweight? And we can all have our assumptions about that. And I think most of those assumptions would be positive now, but they're still assumptions. We don't actually know. So for that to kind of be taken away was unfortunate. But still, Jones went in there. The only thing we really saw proven on that Saturday night was that Cyril Gagne's ground game is, you know, very suspect. And John Jones took complete advantage of that. But you have to be that good to be able to take advantage of it. So he proved that in one way. But you know what he did prove? That his next pay-per-view is going to be a massive seller, I think, because everyone's going to want to tune in to see John Jones fight again. So it's a little bit of a negative, I suppose, in that way. A positive for John Jones because he got the win, but a massive positive for John Jones because, like, if he manages to get there the next time for the big fight against Stipe, everyone will be absolutely dying to see what he looks like again because all those questions are still left unanswered.
Severe MMA Sean Sheehan with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. How critical were you on your shows to Cyril Gagne?
Fairly critical, to be honest. I it's very tough for me to sit here at home and go, that, you know, how do you find yourself in that choke when you are that level of fighter? But also, like, you have to do that, I think. Like, you look at a fight where he fought Francis Ngannou and he got beaten in a similar sort of way to everything that came before the choke, right? He got taken down with a body lock over and over. If people might remember, Francis Ngannou didn't take him down once with like what you would call like a regular takedown. No double legs, no single legs. I think he got like 5-6 takedowns. One was when Gagne kicked like above his head and Francis kind of slammed him.
Oh, yeah.
All the rest were body lock, you know, muscle takedowns, if you want to say it that way. And that's exactly what John Jones took him down with. And I'm thinking to myself, like, what is going on here? Like, how the first thing, like 2 minutes into a fight, you get taken out. Like, if he got taken out with a single leg or a double leg or something different, I could have said, okay, fair enough. But God almighty, when you're taken down by that, and then you get caught in a submission, John Jones completely takes off the submission, readjusts himself, goes back in, gets a submission again, and then you get tapped. I'm like, you know, I'm not BJJ black belt or anything like that, but that doesn't look good. That is not good. And
looks worse upon the rewatch, honestly, when John bails on it and then with relative ease sinks it right back in. All right. A few other things that I want to get to with the great Sean Sheehan. So in terms of the altitude as a factor in the first fight, the second fight between Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman, right? So they fought in August, last August, UFC 278, and Leon Edwards was largely listless in those middle rounds. So some people, when they are handicapping this trilogy matchup, they're talking a lot about altitude. Even Gilbert Durinho Burns suggesting that he is picking Leon Edwards because he just expects him to be better. And Teddy Atlas said to me this week that when a champion wins the title, they become 30% better. Now, that's not necessarily his theory. I do subscribe to that philosophically. I think you win the belt, you become 20% better, like instantly. Well, Alexa Grasso, Leon Edwards, instantly 20% better. But to what extent, if you can get predictive with me, do you think that the altitude should be factored into a handicap for the main event this week?
I'm not sure, to be honest. Like, I think the second part of that is more of a concern in terms of how much better has Leon gotten, how much worse has Kamaru got, or how much better it has made Kamaru. We don't know. We don't know that answer. Like, the thing on the champions, you know, getting 20% better as well. I always thought something Rashad Evans once said always stuck out to me. He said, I won the title, and the next morning I woke up, and I was the same guy. I was like, I thought everything would be different. I thought my whole life would change, but it really didn't. You know, I was just a fighter who had to train hard every day to fight my next fight, even though I had the belt. And like, that's not the same for everyone now. And you know, maybe Leon is a different mentality to that. But I'm sure there is a bit of that there as well. And you have to kind of climb over that hurdle to get to that 20% to go into your next fight. So that's an interesting thing. Like, none of this is a given. Like, you would think, Usman getting knocked out, it's a given he might not be as confident going into this, but not necessarily. He could right. be, his whole mindset could be, I can't believe that fucker knocked me out. I'm going to go in here and do absolutely everything. I'm going to train as hard as I've ever trained before and go in there and beat him. So we really don't know. Like, I think the knockout part is a massive part as well, because I think I mentioned this on the show before, but I spoke to Michael Bisping once and talked about the Dan Henderson knockout, and he told me the next time he came to fight, he was backstage and he was thinking, oh my God, the last time I was fighting, I got knocked clean out, most embarrassing thing of my, you know, to ever happen. Usman is in the exact same position now going into this fight. Like, how will that mentally play against him? I don't know. And it's such an interesting fight to break down from a tactical point of view, because like, I think most people would agree before the last fight, after the last fight, that Usman is like slightly ahead in terms of a technical fighter and a tactical fighter, and got caught with a big knockout, which was great. There was no piece of luck about it whatsoever. If anyone says that, they're a bullshit artist. He set it up, landed the shot, knocked him out. Nothing at all lucky about it. But throughout the whole, you know, 23 minutes of the fight or whatever we saw, apart from the first round, apart from, you know, parts of the fifth round, Usman was the better fight. But what if he's 5% less? Like, is Edwards good enough to take advantage if he's 5% less? And I would say yes is the answer to that, because Usman is like a massively well-rounded fighter. I was talking about it on the podcast this week. Like, is he the best striker in that division? No. Is he the best wrestler in that division? No. Does he have the best cardio in that division? Like, he's up there, but I would probably say no. Like, he's not the best at anything in that division, but there's no one as well-rounded as he is. If you have an issue anywhere, whether it's mentally, as Usman might have, whether it's wrestling, obviously, which Usman doesn't have, whether it's striking, whether it's cardio, whatever it might be, he will take advantage of it. If you're, you know, if the crowd is roaring at you when you come out, all the English crowd behind Edwards, and you can't handle that, he will take advantage of it. So this is a fight, I think, where we saw the last time, Usman needed to be perfect, and he wasn't. And I think he needs to be again. Nothing, you know, usually we say that with, like, if you're fighting McGregor or a big knockout puncher or something like that, you have to be perfect. But with Edwards, it's a little bit different, because you throw away a round, you throw away two rounds, it's a very, very tough position against someone as well-rounded as him. So there's so many different integers. Going into the second fight, honestly, I wasn't that excited about it, to be honest. I wanted to see the Chimaev fight, and I wanted to see a couple of other fights, but now I'm massively excited for this one, because there's so much we just don't know.
Some people billing it as the singular biggest fight in UK mixed martial arts history. We asked our listeners and viewers poll question on the Anakin Florian podcast, and I wanted to throw this your way, Sean. I don't need any long form answer necessarily, and I don't even know necessarily how predictive you're forced to get on your show, but of the four fighters atop the marquee at UFC 286, and I'll list them in order of betting favorite, largest to smallest: Kamaru Usman, Rafael Fiziev, Justin Gaethje, Leon Edwards. In whom are you most confident to get a win this weekend? And overwhelmingly, well, 40% of respondents said Kamaru Usman, which is a high percentage. Who are you most confident in terms of the big four this weekend?
I don't know. Do I have an answer to that one, to be honest? My two picks are Usman and Fiziev. But I'm not massively confident in either of them, to be honest. Like, do you know one thing? I think a lot of people are writing off Justin Gaethje very easily here. We forget how good of a fighter Justin Gaethje actually is. And I just wonder if he'll add in something a little bit different here. We're all expecting, I think, a Rock'em Sock'em Robots barn burner over three rounds. But I wonder, will he just throw in a takedown? I wonder, will he do something a little bit different against Fiziev? But also, do you want to do that? Because I think if you're Gaethje, you go a little bit more technical. You're playing into Gaethje's, if you're Gaethje, you go a bit more technical. You're playing into Fiziev's game. Do you push that pace, go absolutely all out, and try to push the cardio issues that we've seen with Fiziev in the Bobby Green fight and in the Dos Anjos fight as well? Very interesting. But I don't know. I go with Fiziev. Fiziev is my answer. I went long. I always go long.
No, it's good. That's good. All right. Before I let you go, should I curb my enthusiasm on Ian Gary when I suggest that he's ready for top 15 competition? I feel pretty convicted in saying that he has a great chance to become a world champion in one of the UFC's most competitive divisions. I think he's elite right now. I think there are matchups in the top 15 that are favorable right now. Where is your level of enthusiasm for Ian Gary as we sit here early 2023?
I try to temper it a little bit because I don't want to go overboard because, you know, the whole Irish thing and everything like that. But I interviewed Ian Gary before he made his professional debut, and I've seen all his amateur fights and everything like that. And I've been excited about him for a long, long, long time. And I think we've got to the point where don't rush it now, maybe. You know, if you move him that one step too quickly, I think it might be an issue. I would love to see, I think he mentioned an interview he did recently, Nico Price. What a fight that would be. What an exciting fight that would be. I would love to see that. Then maybe, you know, Brian Barberena and Gunnar Nelson are fighting next week. Give him the winner of that then after that, maybe. And then we can start talking about top 15 fights. No problem. I think what he needs next is a guy everyone knows. You know, he's fought some good guys so far, but a lot of people maybe have to, you know, go on Sherdog and see who they are, kind of a thing. No one has to do that with Nico Price. No one has to do that with Gunnar Nelson. Right. No one has to do that with Brian Barberena. I think that's what he needs next. And didn't move him on further after that because, yeah, he has top 15 written all over him. He has top 5 written all over him if things keep going the way they do. But we've seen many fighters before like that, and they haven't reached it. So he'll have to knuckle down and stay behind Henry Hooft. He's a great gym over there. And I know he's been training with Leon Edwards as well when he's been back in the UK. So, he's some great training behind him. But definitely has always been a top-notch prospect, and he will continue to be.
Tired of snooty wines and their old wine culture? Confused by words like malolactic fermentation? Yeah, we are too. So with 19 Crimes, you can do the fancy schmancy tilt sip smell routine, or don't. 19 Crimes is the rebel of wine and culture, telling the stories of rogues and rule breakers who overcame adversities. From convicts banished to Australia to the legendary icon Snoop Dogg himself, 19 Crimes wine is defiant by nature, bold in character, and always uncompromising. 19 Crimes, the official wine of UFC. Pick up in stores nationwide or online at 19crimes.com. Enjoy responsibly. 2024, Sonoma, California.
It's a great answer. Ready to go, too, with some possible future matchups for Ian Gary. And I think that makes more sense right now. Nico Price, probably number 25 in the world, and the name recognition is certainly there. All right, if you want more from Sean Sheehan on Twitter, at Sean Sheehan, BA, Severe MMA, SureDog.com. Very much appreciate you, brother. Enjoy the pay-per-view this weekend. I am still sitting on my 2 tickets, so I know you can get credentialed, and you're probably more connected than I even know. But if you change your mind, my 2 tickets are yours this weekend, okay?
I book my flights now.
All right. We'll talk. Sean Sheehan.
Thanks for having me. See you
here. Right. Always
great
brother.
Stuff. Always
good stuff from Sean Sheehan here on the Anakin Florian podcast. I did think it was interesting when I went on Teddy Atlas's show earlier this week, Kenny, when he said you win the title, you become 30% better. And I don't know if he was attributing that quote to someone, but in part he was piggybacking upon something that I had said, which is to suggest that like Leon Edwards became better as soon as he walked out of that arena. Now, maybe I lean too much into the aesthetic on Instagram, how it feels like he's taken his strength and conditioning to a whole new level. But to what extent do you subscribe to the theory that when you become the champion, you become 20 to 30% better?
I think it is different for everyone. I will use my own story to answer that, though. When I was fighting, I wanted to fight the best guys, but I didn't know that I wanted to be I didn't know that I would be a world champion. I wanted to be a world champion, and I think I was always waiting for that championship moment to pull through. And I always felt I was on the if I could get over that hump that. Absolutely, I would get that in my mind, confidence-wise, for my training of what I was doing, for my approach, for my next fight. I always knew that, or I felt like it would have made me at least 30% better, for sure. That was like one of the big things for me, and I definitely believe that to be true for a lot of fighters. You don't know that you could be a world champion, but you're trying to. And I think getting to that moment means so much. And I think it proves so much to yourself that it gives you this insane amount of confidence. I felt like that would have been the case for me. So that was surprising to hear that with Rashad. That's interesting.
It is interesting, and it's a longer form conversation. But when Kenny fought Joe Stevenson, if you don't know it, UFC 91 in 2008, underneath Randy Couture and Brock Lesnar, it was one of the biggest fights of Kenny's career. And there was so much pressure on Kenny because felt like he was being groomed as the number one contender yet again. And he knew if he won this fight, he was going to be fighting for the belt. And you didn't just win the fight, but you dominated. Huge showcase fight, massive pay-per-view. And I just have to think, going home after that fight, your confidence was probably on a completely different level, but you also are not yet the champion. And knowing you the way I know you, you're thinking about all the work that probably you just laid out for yourself just by winning that fight, you know, but.
Totally, man.
All right, well, hope you're getting ready for UFC 286. It is just a couple of days away, the welterweight championship to be decided in this historic third matchup between Leon Edwards and Kamaru Usman. Not sure who you think is going to come out on top, but you can place your bets not now, but right now on DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC. And new customers can bet just $5 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly. Also, all users can take the MMA action to another level with DraftKings same game parlays. Just download the DraftKings Sportsbook app, use code AFPOD, bet $5 on UFC 286 to get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code AFPOD only at DraftKings Sportsbook. 21 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility and deposit restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details and state-specific responsible gambling resources. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. Bonuses issued as bonus bets. Terms at sportsbook.draftkings.com/MMA terms. So Kempfel and I don't live in Massachusetts anymore, but sports betting is now legal in Massachusetts as of just a few days ago. To that end, let us make some selections and get to our main event challenge.
It's the main event challenge. Anik.
The time is most definitely now.
Florian.
I finished fights! I'm going to do everything possible to win.
The main event challenge. The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast.
Big gun Brian Petrie.
Let's go.
It's good to see you, brother.
Hey, boys. How are we doing?
So my twin brother felt like I should issue you an on-air apology for last week. So nobody's happier for your success than me and Ken Flo.
Correct.
Okay. I'm not sure anybody pumps out the MMA Takes podcast as much as I do. Right.
Correct.
So I would be expectant that if you go on Sirius XM satellite radio, that they would maybe promote our podcast.
Sure.
And so I guess my venom should have been directed at them, but I got in like a major fight with my twin brother this because he thought my venom was directed at you.
No.
So I'm just here to apologize if you sort of felt that, you know. But you know, my Sirius XM boycott continues through International Fight Week, whether my twin brother likes it or not.
Listen, I come from a long line of ball busting. I mean, literally, that's all me and my stepfather do. That instead of giving each other hugs, we insult each other. So I liked it because I froze when he goes, Brian Petrie from MMA Takes Podcast at Brian Petrie MMA. I'm like, wait, shit, hold on. No, yes. But I'm also from another bigger show, which is what most people know me from. So I kind of froze a little bit. But no, thank you. Listen, no one rides hard for me than John Anik behind the scenes, on camera, whatever. I love it. And thank you for Jason Anik. What a lovely human being to have my back like that. Thank you, Jason.
I mean, I can only be the president of Team Florian. It sounds like Jay is like the president of Team Petrie because he came at me pretty hard. But you can also catch Brian Petrie in advance of UFC 286 on MMAfighting.com. And he'll also be on VSiN's show on Saturday with Dave Ross and Matt Brown, I believe, getting you primed for UFC 286.
Let's do it.
So I'm going to update the standings, but before I'm going to do that, I just quickly wanted to get your thoughts on Merab Dwalishvili because I got Sean Sheehan's thoughts, and certainly you heard from Ray Longo and Matt Serra a few days ago. No point of comparison for me, man. This dude's the real deal and on a championship trajectory, to be sure. To what extent were you blown away by Merab last Saturday?
I mean, extremely blown away. Most cappers, they don't like being wrong, right? They get chirped at and they get very sensitive. Hey, you know, blah, 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 blah. You know, I want the heat. I was wrong. I picked Jan. I thought the fight was going to be different. My pre-fight read was wrong. And we're sitting there watching the fights, and I had a pretty good night betting, right? And I had Jan by decision. And as the fight's going on, I'm really quiet. My wife goes, Oh no, you're losing a lot of money, aren't you? Who do you got? Who should we root for? And it has nothing to do with me being mad. I was blown away. That was a career changing performance. That's like Mario when he gets the mushroom. He leveled up Marab. The Aldo fight was a big fight, but he didn't look as good as he did. He was striking. He was interrupting Jan striking with his takedowns, 49 takedown attempts. Could look like he could have won another five rounds. I was in awe. And that's my biggest problem as a capper is I'm a fan first. So the money aside, I was blown away by Marab's performance. No one's going to want to fight that guy at 135. I mean, it's crazy. Who's signing the dotted line to fight him? And right. All the smarter people than me, like Kenny, got him at plus money, which is insane because I don't see that happening anytime soon either. So just overall, just an incredible level up performance by Marab. And I couldn't be happy for him. Seems like a nice guy. Obviously kind of family of the podcast with Ray and stuff. So, right. I mean, just unbelievable.
And an unbelievable battle for airtime between Ray Longo and Matt Serra on our Monday show. So much so that we didn't get to acknowledge Alexander Volkov, who, by the way, Ken Flo changed his pick to Tail Petrie there. You guys had Volkov plus 130. We didn't talk about Nikita Krylov. Kenny, I don't know the jiu-jitsu world, but I'm just saying, like, I'm avoiding fighting Nikita Krylov if I'm a light heavyweight contender. I just feel like he is so problematic in so many different areas of the game, and just want to get your two cents on that fight. I know you did pick Krylov.
The dude just wants to fight you. Oh. He wants to get right in your face and just scrap. Let's get right to the point here. Who's the better man? And I love that about him. And I think it was the right approach because I don't think Span was ready for that level of pressure and pacing. You know, Span can get down to dirty too, but I think over time, I think he started to lose confidence. He was going for a bunch of submissions, was losing position, and Krylov just was kind of kept getting out of those positions. Span was getting more frustrated, and because of it, he lost confidence, and Krylov started to take over, just kind of fell right into that triangle, man, and Krylov is a finisher through and through. That was a wild fight, dude.
And then BP,
yeah,
you had Saeed Nurmagomedov over Jonathan Martinez. It sounds to me, based upon our text chain, that both you and Kenny actually thought Saeed Nurmagomedov did enough to win the fight. You went three units, right? Testicles on the table.
Yes.
So that's a huge swing, right? Yeah. From plus 300 to minus 600. So a $900 swing for you. Right. Your thoughts on that fight?
Listen, I might have had some green colored glasses. I was very upset initially. Kenny rewatched it and said, I think Saeed won. I still think he won, but it was razor close. That third round was everything. I thought it was 1-1 going into the third. I thought Saeed won the third. But no bones about it. Saeed faded a little bit. Jonathan Martinez is a dog in there. He defended a lot of stuff that I did not think he'd be able to defend. So that was a poor read on my part, putting three units on the table. So I'm not going to blame the judges on that one, but I do think he won the fight. But you know, it is what it is. You know, I'm going to have to dust myself off and win some fights here. Come on.
If this podcast is still going strong in 10, 12 years when I'm done, I can't wait to have a team. Because if you remember, Petrie and I are a team this year, and Cody and Kenny are a team. So mm-hmm. I'm taking the Petrie punishment, however it falls. But dude, I'd be doing like 5-star max plays every week. It would be so reckless. I'd be like $5,000 down in mid-March.
Yeah.
Real quickly, I want to get Kenny's thoughts before I update the standings on this inverted triangle by Davy Grant. Certainly, I remember one of the first pro MMA fights I ever called. It was Toby Imada getting Jorge Masvidal with that inverted reverse triangle choke. But Rafael Unsal got as high as number 3 in the world, Kenny. He won 7 in a row from 2011 to 2014, right? That included a win over TJ Dillashaw by split decision, set up a rematch with Dillashaw, if you recall, at UFC 200, and he lost that fight, and Asunso ends up closing out his career, having lost 5 of 6. But even after the Dillashaw loss, won 4 more in a row, included a win over Aljamain Sterling and a win over Rob Font. So wanted to throw a little Asunso appreciation out there and also get your thoughts on that inverted triangle, because you certainly don't see that every day.
Asunso is a stud, man. You know, called a lot of his fights, knew him and his brother from way before when they weren't in the UFC, just doing jiu-jitsu tournaments. And it was good to see a Sun Tzu have his retirement moment and all that stuff. Deserves a ton of respect. If you're a UFC fighter, John, you're looking for, at the very least, like a signature win. And that next level up from that would be some kind of highlight, right? Like that highlight knockout or submission. That was Davy Grant's moment right there. Because you look at the whole sequence. He went, he hurt a Sun Tzu. Sun Tzu's rocked. You know, he shoots in for that takedown and he goes right into one of the most technical and unusual submissions in the game. Gets that inverted triangle, just a thing of beauty, puts him out. Man, I was loving that. And Davy Grant, man, he's, again, one of these guys, one of the nicest dudes ever. I've known him a long time as well. So to see him get that kind of signature win over, you know, a legend really in a Sun Tzu was really cool.
Bri, it seemed like it came shortly after Davy Grant was deducted a point for a fence grab. And Eric Nixick took issue with the fact that a Sun Tzu was not re-granted the position. Right. If you're a Sun Tzu retroactively, certainly rather the position than have that point deducted. But I thought that was interesting as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, listen, Davy Grant, it was theatric, you know, he's down a point. He might lose. He's getting taken down a lot. You know, Sun Tzu was winning the fight essentially. And then he comes back and he pulls that out. I mean, unbelievable. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. And in a stud. I doubted him. I was like, cause he missed a lot of time with injuries and he came off the Ultimate Fighter and I was like, this guy's still on the roster. I was dead wrong because he's the only one that's given Adrian Nunez an actual fight. I mean, some people thought he might have won. So, right. Kid's nails. I love it.
All right, let us update the standings. Kenny Florian's lead is now $1,315. Okay. So, Team Florian was -505. Team Petrie was -1020. We mentioned the 3-unit sting on Saeed Nurmagomedov. Kenny's switch up after the weigh-in. He did not like Alexander Romanov on the scale. Pivots to Volkov. Nicely done, Ken Flo.
Yep.
I don't know that you've ever missed when you've pivoted off of one guy to another. And then Kenny, the big one, was, of course, his hit on Merab Dwalishvili, a +185. So, Florian in the black for the week, +115. Shaves his overall nut down to -390. Petrie -685 on the week, -1705 overall. We've had a lot of response from our listeners in terms of how to make this more accurate in terms of your year end number. I am not going to allow you guys to pick totals over under 4.5 rounds on the main event. Not going to do totals, at least right now. Maybe I'll change my mind. But in an effort to have a more real number for you guys at the end of the year, heretofore, you will be allowed to abstain from picking one fight per week. So we still would like your analysis, but you don't have to bet every fight. And with that, we will get in to UFC 286. I'll take a quick pick here. Joanne Wood -165. Luana Carolina is +140. Now, this fight you guys were picking because it was going to be the feature bout on pay-per-view, at least on a first draft of the fight card that I saw. Guess I'll have to ask my man Zach Candido as to the changes. But now this is the third fight of the night and not third from last, Brian. Probably makes more sense, a more appropriate slot, just given the stakes, both of these women coming off at least one loss in a row. Which way you going here, Joanne Wood, Luana Carolina?
Yeah, I love Joanne Wood. You know, she's been around forever. Problem is I just feel like she doesn't want it anymore. She seems just a little listless in there. She doesn't seem like she wants it. And Luana Carolina coming off the horrible knockout over Molly McCann, but a fight where it was competitive. My biggest problem with Luana Carolina is her volume. She doesn't throw enough. I think if she threw enough, she's got great kicks, great hands, long for the division. I think she'd do really well. Takedown offense has shored up, had been a problem in the past. Don't see that being a problem against Joanne Wood. Hate picking against Joanne Wood, but I got to go with the dog here, Luana Carolina. I think she's going to decision her, maybe even finish her on the feet, but I just think she's a little bit longer.
All right, BP likes Luana Carolina. Joanne Wood's lost 3 in a row, Ken Flo, last of which came about a year ago. Petrie was in the building, came against the now champ Alexa Grasso. Carolina felt Molly McCann's power her last time out. That was 364 days ago when she makes the walk Saturday at the O2. You going Carolina the dog or JoJo Wood the favorite, Ken Flo?
You know, I think it a lot of that's fair of what Brian said. However, I do think Luana lacks a little bit of potency with her striking. Like there's nothing where I could say, you know, she can go out there and really you know, juice up that fight to the point where she can really take over. I think this is a fight where JoJo can let her skills shine a little bit more. You know, a lot of it does depend on how badly she wants this. I think that is accurate. But I think JoJo can pull this off. So give me Wood.
Hey, give me Wood. Got to think, Ken Flo, that she's put in some serious work having dropped her last three.
Yeah.
All right. Featured prelim at featherweight. Jack Shore -490. Makwan Amirkhani +390. So Shore, a near 5-1 favorite, Brian, in his divisional debut. He is 7-0 in this weight class, for the record. Started as a pro at 145, 2016, 2017, then moved down, became the Cage Warriors Bantamweight champion. Then he loses for the first time in the UFC to Ricky Simone, and now he's moving on up to face Amirkhani, who's about as UFC tested as it gets, Brian Petrie. Jack Shore, Makwan Amirkhani. Who do you like?
This is a tough one because I hate the line. I mean, Jack Shore, he's a great prospect. He showed what he lacked in Ricky Simone. Simone's a fucking beast for the division. And Jack Shore's got some tricky striking, doesn't throw enough. His volume's never high. Good jiu-jitsu takedowns, excuse me, are a little on the average side. Then you got Amirkhani, who's flashy at times, who gasses at times, who looks good at times. He's very unpredictable. It's hard to really pin this guy down. And, Mr. Finland with all the chicks. I mean, if the guy could take the break from the chicks, he had some good cardio, I'd imagine. Yeah. But, you know, if you look at his topology pictures, it's him with some chicks. But this is a tough fight. Listen, I think Jack Shore is the better fighter here. But at the price, I don't know. And we play a game in this. You know, we play a game. And it might be worth it to take Amirkhani here, but I can't do it. I won't allow myself to do it. I'm going to pick Jack Shore, and this is one of the fights I'm gonna abstain from. I'm not gonna pick this one just because the line's too crazy. I can't predict Amirkhani. I just can't do it, even though I think Jack Shore is very good. I feel like a big puss bag for not doing it, for restraining, but just I'm not gonna do it. Can't do it.
No, and that's why we have injected abstinence in this equation, because we don't want you guys to be in a position where you have to lay -490 to Jack Shore and to tell the audience that when you're not recommending at all that they lay a price like that. Kenny, 14th UFC start for Mr. Finland, Makwan Amirkhani. He's 7-6, but five of those losses, just hear me up. JSP, Jonathan Pierce, who I think is future top five. The undefeated Lerone Murphy, who fights this weekend. The 19-1 Arnold Allen, Edson Barboza, and Shane Burgos. So it's not as though his record is littered with bad losses. For the most part, Amirkhani has beaten the guys he's supposed to beat. Vegas says he's not supposed to beat Jack Shore. What do you think?
This is why BP is so smart. I think that Amirkhani is very dangerous. He's got knockout power. He's got that wrestling background. I do think Jack Shore overall is the more technical fighter. I think he wins this fight by decision, maybe by submission. And we've seen Amirkhani susceptible to losing position in the past. So I'm going with Jack Shore on this one as well. And I'm with you, BP. It's not worth the bet, though. The line is just way too heavy for Jack Shore, almost 5-1. Can't do it. Not going to do it.
All right. We'll see. And again, you guys reserve the right, as long as you tag the podcast so Cody can repurpose that, you do reserve the right to change your pick. All right. Pay-per-view main card opener in the middleweight division. Marvin Vettori -265. Roman Dolidze +225. Dolidze 6-1 in the UFC, coming off a stoppage of Jack Hermanson last December. Bri, I guess if anybody can knock out the hot-headed Marvin Vettori, maybe it's this fucking guy. What do you think of these 285ers?
Love this fight. This fight's got some juice to me. You know, Marvin Vettori, blockhead for a reason. You know, the guy is a little delusional at times with his own skills, but he left California. He's in Vegas. Now he's training with the crop at 85. Chris Curtis, Sean Strickland, Dolidze was a part of that camp. Not sure if he did his camp in Georgia. A lot of moving parts going on here, but Vettori looks to be in great shape. His problem is he's and it's not even a problem. He's just good, right? But he's not great anywhere. He can take you down. He's a big, strong guy, but only got one submission in the UFC to his name, I believe. Maybe one other one, but Carl Roberson was the last one he did. Pillow hands, doesn't really knock him out, has good boxing, dropped Jack Hermanson. But you know, he has a volume guy. He's got good cardio. You can't put him out. Then you got Dolidze, who's just a fucking wild man, right? Strikes aren't the most prettiest out there, right? He throws heavy hands, can knock you out from different weird angles, and his ground game's really good. I mean, what he did to Jack Hermanson on the ground last time out was so impressive, because Hermanson's a stud on the ground, no chump. That I'm like, whoa, this, and that was off his back that he did that, you know, a couple sweeps that he hit, and it was very impressive. I love this fight so much. And listen, Vettori could go three rounds, piece up Dalice, win a decision, you know, do his yell at the end and call for a title shot or whatever he does. But that's boring, right? Let's not be boring. Let's go dog here. Let's go Dalice. I don't think he can finish him because I do trust Marvin Vettori's durability, but it'd be something else if he could get this guy out of there. But give me Dalice here. I just think he's got something to him. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember his fight with John Allen. He looks at the corner and goes, hey, you want me to drop for a heel hook? Drops through a heel hook, doesn't get it, right? Doesn't get it. The cockiness of this guy to be like, hey, you want me to hit him with my move and not even finish it? I love the guy. I love him. Going to Lice. He's a hot hand. Could be undefeated. That Trevin Giles fight was a little suspect, in my opinion. So, yeah, give me the Lice, man.
And I have said there's no fighter that intimidates me more in a fighter meeting setting than Roman Dalice. I was so happy to see that he's not on our list, actually, for London this week. So, Kenny, Marvin Vettori is still 29 years old, despite all of the MMA accomplishments. Roman Dalice is 34. And just one number for you. Since 2016, 7 years, only two men have beaten Marvin Vettori, Israel Adesanya and Robert Whittaker, and neither man could put him away spanning those 55 minutes. So, yeah. Certainly the fights that he has had to win, Paulo Costa and others, he has won, favored to win again here against Dalice. How do you see it playing out?
Well, Vettori is very consistent. You know exactly what he brings to the table. You know exactly what he's going to do. And he can be very difficult to stop him from doing that. I think that, he's the favorite here. No question about it. But if you beat Vettori, I think you kind of have to beat him by submission or by knockout. And I think Dalice absolutely has the ability to do that. I think Vettori is underrated as a grappler a bit, but I do think that Dalice is much better with his submission game. And I think he could catch Vettori with something, whether it's a leg attack or maybe take the back. He does a lot of unusual and unorthodox moves on the ground, and that can throw off a style like Vettori, who's very straightforward, needs that kind of rice and beans style of fight for him. And if it goes that way, then Vettori wins this fight. But I think there's enough value on Dalice at, what is it, plus 225?
That's right,
kid. To go his way. I think that I think he can catch him in a submission, some kind of crazy transition, or maybe even catch him with one of those wild strikes, because Vettori gets a very emotional in there sometimes. So I think it's worth it. Dalice is he's an interesting cat who I think could surprise a lot of people.
I think the matchmakers are expecting fireworks.
Yeah.
Putting him in that slot to kick off the pay-per-view. We'll see if Roman Dalice can oblige against my good friend Marvin Vettori. All right. Huge fight of flyweight for the women, especially given the new champ now atop the division. You got 12th-ranked Casey O'Neill, minus 180. Number 8, Jennifer Maia, plus 155. Can you imagine how pissed Casey O'Neill would have been if JoJo Wood was on this pay-per-view? I know they're teammates, but this is the fight that deserves to be on pay-per-view. 100%. These are the two women within the top 12. O'Neill is coming off a major knee surgery, but she is 9-0. Last win came February 2022 against Roxanne Modafferi. 20 professional mixed martial arts wins for Jennifer Maia. She's 5-5 in the UFC, though. Fought for the belt back in 2020, as you know, Brian Petrie.
Yes.
You going Maia or O'Neill, kid?
This is a tough one because I like Casey O'Neill. I've been on Casey O'Neill's side since she's debuted in the UFC. She's easy on the eyes. Let's just put it that way for your boy. And she's a great fighter. More importantly, she's a great fighter. I like watching her fight. But coming off a knee surgery like that scares me, right? She hasn't really fought elite competition yet. She had a split decision win over Roxy Modafferi, which, I mean, that's fine. You know, I thought she won, but it got close towards the end there. I like all her skills, but Jennifer Maia, that one round she put against Valentina stuck in my brain. Like, she had a really good round against Valentina. And I'm like, can she do this for 5 rounds? She couldn't. But I'm like, if she could really put something together, she's good. Strike counts low, takedowns are low. But when you're giving me a plus number against someone coming off a really bad knee injury like that, we've seen it before. Guys are, fighters are a little unsteady coming back, and it's only been a year. I mean, I don't know if she's rushing or not. Like, hopefully not, but it hasn't been that long of a time. And this is her biggest fight to date, in my opinion, name-wise. So I'm going to go dog. I'm going to go Jennifer Maia here. I hate picking against Casey O'Neill because I think she's really good. She's tough. She's got a little attitude on her. She's nasty in there, which I love. But I'm going to go Jennifer Maia.
Yeah, Kenny, Casey O'Neill may be not getting the shine she deserved over the last several weeks in these longer form flyweight conversations about Erin Blanchfield and Alexa Grasso. Certainly has that chip on her shoulder. does feel like a pretty quick turn after a major reconstructive knee surgery. That said, O'Neal, about a 2-1 favorite here this weekend. Your thoughts?
Yeah, that's the big question mark, right? With O'Neal and that knee surgery, it can take, or I think it does take, like 2 years, 2 years and a half, if you have a cadaver, you know, installed into your knee for it to be like actually 100%. So that definitely takes time. However, I think O'Neal is nasty enough to get through this. This is one of those where I may reserve the right to change my pick when I see the weigh-ins and some other stuff. But I like Casey O'Neal here. And you know, Brian has a big time point here with Jennifer Maia, who has, you know, faced much tougher competition. I think she has a good set of skills as well to pose some problems here for O'Neal. But I think if O'Neal can utilize that high pressure style and back Maia up, sometimes Maia will shut down her offense as well a little bit. So I think that's going to be the case. Let's go with Casey O'Neal.
All right, some dissension on the two women's fights today. You love to see it. That brings us to a featured bout at 170 pounds. Gunnar Nelson, minus 380. Brian Barberina is plus 310. 17th UFC appearance for Barberina. He had a huge 2022. He beat Robbie Lawler, beat Matt Brown, did lose to Rafael Dos Anjos in December. Kenny, I'm going to lead with you on this one. Gunnar Nelson, still a little bit enigmatic for me, just as far as, like, I don't know where his ceiling is because there have been all these injuries and bouts of inactivity. 11 years on the roster, 14 UFC fights. Hasn't lost since 2019 to Gilbert Durinho Burns, but he's only fought once since 2019. He beat Takashi Sato, a guy he was prohibitively favored to beat. But he's been around. I mean, he made his UFC debut when he was 24 years of age. So Gunnar Nelson again with a bloated number next to his name, minus 380 against Brian Barberina.
I like Gunny here. I think Gunnar's got that style, right? Similar to an RDA, that's going to pose problems for a guy like Brian Barberina. And I know that Barberina said he's been, you know, kind of going camp to camp. He's been training more consistently now. And that is one of the toughest dudes I have ever seen compete inside the UFC. I mean, his chin, his durability, his heart. He's an absolute stud, an absolute beast. And if Gunnar decides to trade in the pocket, even for just a couple exchanges against Barberina, that would be the worst mistake he could make because Barberina is going to take over that fight and could potentially knock him out after that. But I think Gunnar is going to, you know, have that wide karate stance, stay on the outside, pick his shots. But all of that really is to get the takedown and put Barberina on his back. That's what he wants. And I think that's what he's ultimately going to do there. I'm going to go with Gunnar Nelson here. I'm going to put an extra unit Woo! On Gunnar as well. I like his style here. Maybe a little bit of a gamble because Barberina is very dangerous and he's hard to put away at times, but I like Gunny here.
See what it does to me and Petrie when Ken Flo goes two Woo! Units, like we don't even know what to do with ourselves. Woo! Kenny will also, by the way, lead us on the main event coming up here in about 3 minutes. Brian Petrie, Gunnar Nelson, Brian Barberina, who do you like?
I tell you what, if Ken Flo just opened up some books, he would move. This guy would pay off his house. Listen, I was going to lock him up myself. Like, I love this fight for Gunny. We saw the blueprint with Barberina against RDA, which Kenny and I both predicted right. RDA is going to take him down. People sleep on RDA's jiu-jitsu, and Gunnar Nelson's jiu-jitsu is great, especially when he's on top. He flows so well. He's a little undersized for 170, but he's so dominant on top. I mean, this guy had a ground fight with Damian Maia, lost, but didn't get his neck taken, didn't get his arm taken. Like, this guy's special. I remember being a dork way back when he was 20, 21, 22 years old, hammering on the underground before he made his UFC debut, like, Gunny Nelson's the next big thing or whatever. This guy is, and John's right. There's a lot of inconsistency and stuff like that. But I think this number is obviously high. I know we're partnering with DraftKings. I would love to see DraftKings set a line for like over three takedowns for Gunny. So I think he can get over three takedowns, maybe even a Gunny special prop bet by sub. So I think he's taking a sub here. I'm with Kenny here. I'm not going to double lock him like Kenny. I'm going to let Kenny have his moment here. I love when he fucking nuts on the table there. I'm not going to steal that shine here, but I'm on Gunny as well.
And we can affect change as far as the DraftKings Sportsbook is concerned, right? As Cody says in our chat room, we can make that happen. I got a direct line to Johnny Avello, the director of the Racing Sportsbook for DraftKings Sportsbook. Yeah. So you want a number on the board, Brian Petrie? We can make that happen.
Let's get on board.
All right.
Yes.
Let us get to the co-main event. Probably the fight I was most curious to hear your predictions on today. This is a title eliminator in the lightweight division. Rafael Fiziev, minus 230. Justin Gaethje, plus 195. So Fiziev, born in Kazakhstan, fights out of Azerbaijan by way of Thailand. He's won six in a row since dropping his UFC debut. Gaethje, of course, your former interim champion. I'm not sure I've ever seen plus 195 next to his name. Probably right. For the Khabib fight, it was even bigger. But Justin Gaethje, returning for the first time since the Charles Oliveira fight, May 7th of last year. Does he have enough for Rafael Fiziev? Brian Petrie, your mic is hot.
This fight was kind of easy for me to break down and pick, which scares me. You know what I mean, John? John, you're a handicap. You're like, oh, I'm seeing this so right. And you're like, wait a second. Should I fade myself here? That's how I feel like, because I think, say his name one more time so I don't fuck it up.
Fiziev.
I think Fiziev is the best striker at 155, hands down. I think he is clean. I think he is technical. Volume a little low. Cardio question marked a little bit. Anytime he's thrown over 100 punches with the Bobby Green fight, and he faded bad in that fight, right? Justin Gaethje throws 100 punches without breaking a sweat. That guy is just all action all the time, but he's looked so kind of off to me, right? He gets hurt in every fight nowadays. Chandler had him hurt this last time he won. Oliveira slept him, dropped him three times with just clean technique. Oliveira obviously one of the best in the world. But Fiziev is just clean with everything. His Brad Riddell fight was very impressive to me because they were training partners. I think Brad Riddell used to coach him or something like that. There was some kind of real relationship there. And it was a close fight, competitive fight. Riddell was wrestling a little bit, but Fiziev just knocked him out, took him out, and made it look effortlessly. This guy's takedown offense is unbelievable, 92%. Justin Gaethje doesn't have a takedown in the UFC, so I don't think that's going to be a problem, but he does have wrestling. I'm seeing Fiziev here. Fiziev by knockout all day long. That's what I'm seeing. I just think he's a little too clean. I think Gaethje's going to make it ugly. And I'm a Gaethje guy. I love Justin Gaethje. What I've seen, if he gets in there with like really clean technique, he dips his head too much. He throws a little wild. He likes the inside clinches. And that's where Fiziev works some of his best work, those elbows and that knockout of a Meccano. I mean, forget about it. Yeah. This guy's a real problem. And I think this is a coming out party for him. So give me Fiziev.
And to underscore the extent to which Rafael Fiziev is a problem, Justin Gaethje is a bigger underdog against this dude than he was against Charles Oliveira, right? And that number has not been bet to a point where that is no longer the case. We did ask a poll question for today's Anakin Florian podcast. Of the four fighters atop the marquee, in whom are you most confident to get the win? 40% of respondents say Kamaru Usman. 26% said Rafael Fiziev. Kenny, your thoughts on Fiziev minus 230 against Justin Gaethje in the co-main event?
Well, Brian's right. Let's look at it, right? Fiziev, he's younger, he's fresher, he's got the better chin. I think he's got more tools on the feet overall. And that's exactly why I'm going with Justin Gaethje. I'm going with Gaethje here, okay? No. This is why. Here's the only thing, okay, is that I don't care who you are, what you've done. Justin Gaethje has the ability to hold your hand and walk through the garden of punishment with you. Sometimes you get out alive, but many times it's you that is buried in that garden. And I think Gaethje's going to find a way to drag Fiziev into a world where he's never been before. He comes from a Muay Thai background. And in Muay Thai, it's a kind of this like pacing, and it's just dance, and it slowly picks up. And, you can kind of coast even against very good Muay Thai fighters, and you can kind of chill. And then the fourth and fifth rounds, things start to pick up. There's more clinching. Gaethje gets right to the point, and we're going to find out. And we haven't seen Fiziev in that kind of pressure environment, high pressure environment where he's exhausted and he's got to find a way to win. And I can't get that Bobby Green fight out of my head. That's the problem. If we're going straight up and these guys are even odds, or Fiziev is up by a little bit and Gaethje's close, a close underdog, I'm going Fiziev. But plus 195 for Gaethje on a guy who, in Fiziev, who does stay in the pocket and does get hit at times, you stay in there and you take a hook or two or a right hand from Justin Gaethje, he puts you to sleep. Give me Gaethje here. I like it. And Gaethje always surprises us when we least expect it. Give me Justin Gaethje for some extra dog.
fired.
I mean, we should play that for Justin Gaethje, actually, on the day of the fight and see if that propels him to victory. All right, Kenflo, keep that energy up. We're going right back to you here. Kamaru Usman minus 240, Leon Edwards plus 200. Kamaru Usman was 15-0 to start his UFC career. He was making his sixth welterweight title defense when these two met for that second time at UFC 278 last August. He was moments away from breaking that Anderson Silva record and everything else. And we all know what happened thereafter. Now Edwards, the champion, making the first defense of his title here at the O2, about 3 hours from Birmingham, England. Kamaru Usman, Leon Edwards, who wins it?
This is a tougher fight for me to pick in a lot of ways than Fazeev Gaethje. Usman has a style that will always give a guy like Leon Edwards trouble. I think that if there's one guy who can come back from a devastating knockout in round five, it is Kamaru Usman. I don't think he's going to have all those doubts that I think a lot of other fighters would have, or that hesitancy that I think a lot of other fighters have. Usman is a champion for a reason. He has that champion mindset. Whether he wins or loses, he's always going to have that mindset, and he will always have my respect as one of the greatest welterweights to ever do it. I think his wrestling is a big time problem. His ability to grind and win rounds is a problem. He has a very educated jab. But you know, he doesn't have that potency of a submission game, or I don't think, not against someone like Edwards, where he's got a striking game that is going to be that difficult for Edwards to figure out. I think Edwards is an extremely technical fighter in all assets and all aspects. I think he is a very slick striker who can get Usman to throw and miss and counter. I think Edwards is going to have a renewed sense of confidence coming off of this win over Kamaru Usman. I think that he had a great start to that fight against Kamaru Usman. And I think, you know, it being at high altitude, I think it favors Leon Edwards. The fact that it's not at high altitude anymore, because Kamaru Usman, again, correct me if I'm wrong, he was, you know, training at high altitude in Denver, also in Utah as well for you know, a bit. So I think that I don't know. Edwards had, you know, a lot of disadvantages heading into that fight. The travel, he's got his hometown there. I think his preparation has been on point for this one. And I am going with Leon Edwards to win this fight. Again, it's not an easy pick for me. I would not be surprised to see Kamaru win this one. But I think we have a different guy after this fight in Leon Edwards. I think he's got a certain something. Let's put it this way. Winning in that fashion, the way that he did, and it being in the UK, I like Leon here.
Very interesting. Brian Petrie, you will have the final word. Kamaru Usman, minus 240. Leon Edwards plus 200 right now on DraftKings Sportsbook. Who wins the welterweight championship of the world?
So it's hard enough following Kenny, let alone Gaethje, and then now he's picking Leon Edwards. I'm sitting here going, oh, it's an easy fight for me to pick. He goes, yeah, well, I'm picking the underdog Gaethje. Take a big old dump on BP here. I love it. I fucking love it. Listen, I'm a Kamaru Usman guy. I have been since day one. I love the guy. I don't know why he gets so much shit. People say he's corny. I kind of know he talks like an R&B guy sometimes. He's got his little Usher thing going on, and people are like, yeah, he's corny. I love his mindset, his mental, his skill. Well, I judge what I see in the cage. And he's got swagger for days. I mean, the guy knows how to put an outfit together. Let's just put, you know what I mean?
No doubt.
But the first fight, obviously, was they both were young in the career. Wrestling happened. Second fight, Leon got that takedown, got mount, won the first round. Very interesting there. Leon had relied, after that Kamaru fight, had relied on wrestling a lot of his fights. You know, we saw a lot more grappling out of him. And then, you know, two through four, Usman shut him down. And then cardio, obviously, is king. No one faded, right? Even though Edwards was dejected because I felt like he felt flat that night, his cardio was still there. I mean, if you were dead cardio, you're not throwing that high kick the way he threw it, right? And this is interesting. I've always backed Usman. I've always won money on Usman, right? I bet every single one of his fights, blindly take Usman. I like the guy. This is throwing up some trepidation for me. This is a big pause for me because Leon Edwards is a lot better than I gave him credit for the first fight. The first fight, in my own personal life, max bet Usman. And, you know, that fifth round knockout, the only thing that saved it was John. To me, I lost a couple hundred bucks, but John's beautiful call, which is one of the best calls ever, saved it for me because I'm like, oh, this is special. And then obviously Leon's post fight headshot bang dead is amazing. Listen, Kenny broke it down perfectly. Technically, I can't do that. I can't do what Ken Flo does. I'm just going to go with my gut. And my gut says this could be a lot closer fight. But I think when you get a close fight like that, I'm going to lean on wrestling. And I'm going to lean on the guy who's proven that he can go five rounds throwing over 100 strikes. He threw 83 in the first Leon fight. I think he needs to double that up. He looked really good in the clinches. That's where he did his best work, body work, elbows, when Leon was against the cage. And Leon's going to come out like a bat out of hell in front of his hometown crowd. But I love the way Usman's carrying himself. I love the mental. I love everything he's saying. He handled that loss better than anybody I know. You know what I mean? Or in MMA.
Yeah.
Such class. And I'm going to go with Usman, but I'm excited. The line's a little wide. I thought we were going to get a way better number for sure. So I am a little unsure about the line, but I'm going to take Usman.
All right, good job, fellas. I can't wait to get over there. Last time I called a fight on UK soil was October 26, 2013. So it's been almost 10 years. We're very excited. Wow. We got to get on out of here, but don't forget another episode of the Anakin Florian podcast comes your way on Monday. God willing, we'll recap UFC 286. And these two guys will be back, of course, to look at the massive main event coming up in San Antonio, Texas. Marlon Chito Vera and Corey Sandhagen will get the picks from the fellas probably as early as next Monday. Thanks to Brian Petrie on the ones and twos. Also to Sean Sheehan, our producer. Is Cody Merrow. Production assistant is Will Berger. For BP, for Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. So long for now. We will see you live on pay-per-view for UFC 286 this weekend. Yo, later. Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start. Same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley SAB to CV 2024, Proximo, Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.